Her with Dr. Pam Peek.
Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and this is episode number 533 of the Bold and the Brave Her podcast. Now, today I'm joined by someone super special. You're going to love her, Dr. Jocelyn Wittstein. Now, why is she so special? Honey, have you ever met a female orthopedic surgeon? All right, let this be the first time in your life. And why do I say this is important? Because, honey, she gets it with the female body. That's why. And today we're going to be talking about what? Bones and joints. Who should know better than Dr. Wittstein? Now, Dr. Wittstein is a 47-year-old mom of five, an orthopedic surgeon specializing in sports medicine. She was a collegiate gymnast at Cornell and is currently an associate professor of orthopedic surgery at Duke University. My goodness, she started her practice in 2010, and her research interests are really all about the female athlete across the lifespan. You got to go to her Instagram page and look at her crazy ass antics as she does a little gymnastics for you, which I absolutely love. And welcome to the Her podcast, Dr. Wittstein.
Thanks for having me. That was a very generous introduction.
Oh, there's more coming, honey. Don't even worry about that. Now, you wrote a book that just came out fresh off the press. It's called The Complete Bone and Joint Health Plan: Help Prevent and Treat Osteoporosis and Arthritis. The arthritis part really resonated, like you have no clue, in a big way. I love this book. It just came out, and it's about time that we heard from an orthopedic surgeon, but a woman who gets it with our bodies. You're 47, for crying out loud, and you're also, like moi, an athlete, right?
So I tried to stay athletic, yeah.
Well, I know, seriously. You know, it's like in the 3 minutes I have every day to do anything for myself, but there it is. So I just love this book. And I love the fact that you're at Duke University and you're overseeing so much great women's health as it relates to orthopedics. And so you've got street creds, girlfriend, street creds. And the first question I want to ask you is, why'd you write the book? Why'd you just decide to do it? Why not just sort of carry on as you've been doing with your beautiful practice?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly didn't need more to do in my life. I work full time as an orthopedic surgeon. So I see patients in clinic. I do surgery. I'm just a constantly curious person. So I do a lot of research. And a lot of that, as you mentioned, is at sort of the intersection of women's health and musculoskeletal health and sports-related injuries as well. I love collaborating with other people. So I have a lot going on, but I just always had this desire in the back of my head to kind of package up information for people in this like very accessible, useful way as it relates to osteoporosis and arthritis, because they're just two very basic and very, very common conditions that occur with age. And it's just people don't understand what they are. They don't have this user manual to their bones and joints or to their body. And I would find time and time again, I would have these very detailed conversations with people about their specific problem that they came to see me for, like their rotator cuff tear or their ACL tear or their early arthritis, maybe with a meniscus tear, whatever. And we would have these long, detailed, specific conversations where I'm spending a lot of time counseling them about surgery. But like time and time again, I always end my visits with, do you have any more questions? And the top three questions that people would ask me all the time, they would say, what should I eat? What exercises should I do? And what supplements should I take? So I found that I just wanted to package up really good science-based information for people to be able to educate themselves about their body, about bones and joints, about understand arthritis and osteoporosis, be able to be informed when they go to their doctor. And it was just really satisfying to kind of put it all in one place for people. And you will notice that I have a co-author, Sydney Nutskorsky, who is a registered dietitian and a lifelong friend of mine, also a gymnastics teammate growing up. And I studied nutrition as an undergrad, but I also wanted her to weigh in on all of the nutritional aspects because I think teamwork is so important. And she was someone who was so easy for me to team up with to like really, like, I feel like our brains together cover all the bases. I'm an orthopedic surgeon, a sports medicine specialist. I treat a lot of injuries and help people rehabilitate from them postoperatively or non-operatively. And then she has more nutritional knowledge than I have, although I have a lot of it. I just love the way our brains complement each other to provide this full package. That was a long answer. I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, it's a perfect answer. And I really relate to it. When I wrote my first book, it was for the same reason. It's like, I just can't keep saying this over and over
some
again.
Of that, yes.
You know, this is getting ridiculous. And more importantly, I was frustrated because I didn't have the time to be able to say everything I wanted to say and individualize it and customize it. And I wanted to honor and respect each person. And it's very difficult to do that in restricted time. And so thus all the books. And this is why I congratulate you on your first book, your maiden voyage into the wonderful world of publishing. And this was so important because it's practical. At first I was thinking, oh dear God, this is not going to be one of those anatomical texts that's going to make us crazy. Instead, it was written beautifully. It was written in a very welcoming way. It was like, come on, sit down. Let's have a convo. What's going on with your bones and joints? Ow, really? Where's the ow coming from?
And so many people have both conditions.
Oh, yeah.
Especially women have a propensity for both. So I just don't feel like you can talk about osteoporosis in absence of arthritis or arthritis in absence of osteoporosis, really. I just think people need to be aware of both.
They really coexist. And if you're talking about, especially with athletes, athletes will get, you tell me, you're the expert, but speaking for myself, depending upon what part of the body you were torturing during your training years, you will get arthritis. I mean, there's going to be something going on there.
Well, especially post-traumatic arthritis, and one of my areas of research, of course, among others related to the ACL, including like the female propensity for it, is post-traumatic arthritis. And women, girls are more likely than boys and men to tear their ACL 8 times more likely. But we also know that post-traumatic arthritis is somewhat inevitable 10 to 15 years after an ACL tear, regardless of whether or not we stabilize the knee. So that is yet another way that women are actually sometimes more affected by arthritis is through post-traumatic injuries to knees and sport. So that's just kind of one of those aspects along the health span of women.
All right, let's talk about bones and joints. Now, what I found really cool about this is you talked about joints. Nobody talks about joints. They all talk about bones. We have to look at bone density and all the rest of it. But then I'm thinking, well, wait a minute, things get connected here. And so if you had to talk to a woman right now and tell her, all right, we're going to be a little preventative, right? And we're going to try to enhance your knowledge about your joints. What should you not be doing in terms of prevention? Now, I'm assuming the person you're talking to is not an elite athlete because they torture their bodies and we're not even going to go there. But if you're just a wonderful woman out there who's going to pick up your book and she's going to want to know, okay, what's the bottom line? What am I doing wrong? And why do my knees kind of ache a little bit? And maybe my shoulders and the rest of it. Let's look at knees, for instance, because you keep bringing it up and knees are a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, knees are like one of the most common joints to be symptomatic for people. And I don't think it's so much maybe things that you're doing that you should stop doing. It's more things that maybe you're not doing that you should be doing.
Ah, let's do it. Okay, let's go there.
Yeah. So like, for instance, there's a little bit of a myth that like running causes arthritis. I'm not going to tell people to stop running. Actually, people who are long-term runners are less likely than non-runners to have arthritis. So we don't actually think running causes arthritis, but we think if you have arthritis, running can aggravate it. So a lot of people think the first thing I'm going to say is stop running. And I actually don't tell people to stop running. But maybe, you know, what you're not doing, I do think that a lot of knee pain comes from lack of strength in the surrounding muscles, especially the hip and core muscles actually influence knee pain quite a lot. I think that as women age, they are more prone to inflammation in their joints. We know that with perimenopause and menopause and declining estradiol levels, we do lose some of that anti-inflammatory effect. We see more inflammation in joints. We see more rapid thinning of cartilage. Women over 50 are 40% more likely than men to develop knee arthritis, and that difference doesn't even out until...
Wait a minute, say that one more time?
Women at age 50 are 40% more likely than men to have arthritis. And some of that is probably hormonally mediated because they lose some of that anti-inflammatory effect of estradiol. So multifaceted. We're also now seeing in some studies that testosterone is also related to arthritis. So low testosterone levels may also be precipitating arthritis in women over time. There's a couple of studies showing that there's an inverse relationship between testosterone levels and arthritis, specifically in women.
When women are taking menopausal hormonal therapy, especially estrogen, does that help with this whole issue of arthritis?
So we haven't seen studies showing a reduction in, say, rates of need for total knees, but there are studies that show generally lower inflammatory markers when you look at inflammatory cytokines with hormone therapy. There are basic science studies showing that the synovium of joints responds with less inflammation when treated with estradiol. We know that from even the early studies of the Women's Health Initiative that there was less number and severity of painful joints with estrogen therapy, and that withdrawal of that therapy did result in rebound joint pain. So there's certainly a connection, and it would be hard to come up with another reason necessarily why women would be so much more likely at that time to see that big elevation in rates of arthritis. I think that's one thing. Now, so for women who can use hormone therapy, I think we think of hormone therapy in terms of what it's FDA approved for. It's FDA approved for preventing osteoporosis. First of all, a lot of people don't know that. They think that they need to justify having hot flashes and night sweats, or if those things go away, maybe they don't need hormone therapy. So it is FDA approved and is effective at prophylaxis against osteoporosis. Reducing joint pain and inflammation and making your arthritis symptomatic is not a current indication for hormone therapy, but I think it is an added benefit. So that's one category. Now we have whole categories of women who cannot use hormone therapy for various reasons, concern for previous estrogen receptor sensitive cancers or maybe clotting disorders and things like that. And I never want that group of people to feel like not heard or there's nothing for them. I think other things that can be done for your joints, again, maintaining strength in the muscles that support your joints and in the knees, again, for instance, that's your quadriceps, your hip abductors, your external rotators, your core musculature to take some strain off of your knees. If you already have arthritis, that's different. When we're talking about the choice of cardiovascular activities, one of my favorite activities to recommend to people who have arthritis, but they still want the like high of cardiovascular exercise, which is important for other reasons because women, the number one killer of women is still heart disease. But if you need that high intensity cardio, but you want strength training and you want to help your bone density, rowing is an amazing option for people using an erg. We can start to tweak things as people start to have knee pain to still stimulate bone density, get cardio, but not like kill your knees. Supplements, things we can use as we age. I think there's pretty good data that vitamin D supplementation does reduce knee pain. It does have to be at the level of 2,000 international units per day or higher. If someone does not have a deficiency of vitamin D, I don't recommend they take more than 4,000 units per day because that's kind of the upper limit for intakes. I think there's reasonable evidence behind hydrolyzed collagen supplementation, basic science, and...
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Because people are asking about collagen all the time, and you see it in the canisters, and it's sort of like right next to the protein, the whey protein supplements and the rest of it. So I've been looking at some of the data, and it's interesting. It's a mix. So I would love to hear what you have to say about it.
Yeah. I mean, the basic science studies are a little bit more specific, and sometimes it's hard to see like maybe what's in your collagen supplement, but when you look at studies that include like collagen in your knee, cartilage is a type 2 collagen. So studies that include supplements that have hydrolyzed type 2 collagen do show benefit in terms of reduced breakdown products of or turnover of cartilage. Like if you're kind of looking at like how is your cartilage doing, that's one way you can measure it with these lab values. and also symptoms. So there is, I believe, reasonable evidence for hydrolyzed collagen supplements for clinical improvement, some basic science behind it. There is another type of collagen supplement called UC2 collagen, which is undenatured type 2 collagen that comes in like a 40 milligram dose, like more like a pill you can take, that has some also basic science behind it that works through a completely different mechanism called oral tolerance. So the concept is your body is exposed to this undenatured type 2 collagen and sort of recognize it and then breaks down less of it. And again, there are some studies showing some reasonable benefits to that. I don't like to overwhelm people too much with too many supplements when they see me. You know, if someone asks like what supplements, I always tell people like, you need to see if something actually feels like it's helping you. So I'm like, if you wanted to start with baby steps with some supplements, like I usually say, maybe 2,000 international units a day of vitamin D, you could try the hydrolyzed collagen, and that's super easy to put in your coffee once a day. That's very easy to do.
It's also the most ubiquitous protein in the human body.
Yeah.
Collagen.
And,
yeah.
And then one of my other favorites to kind of recommend to people is turmeric, which has a lot of good evidence behind it. You know, some people say, oh, I just eat turmeric, but the supplements in the range of 1,500 milligrams per day also show that people are able to not use NSAIDs when they utilize that supplement. And that's a big deal for people to not be having, you know, if you have someone who's taking Motrin and Aleve every day, you can't do that forever. So,
no, well, it's horrible for your kidneys.
Yeah.
And so you got to be extremely careful. What about omegas?
Yeah. So great evidence for omega-3 fish oil capsules coming out of literature looking at rheumatoid patients for reducing inflammation. Whenever I quote studies related to rheumatoid arthritis, I never want anyone to take away from this that a fish oil capsule or a quercetin supplement is going to make your need for your DMARDs, your disease-modifying medications, go away in rheumatoid arthritis. Because one of the silver linings of rheumatoid arthritis is there are medications that actually stop the progress of it, as opposed to osteoarthritis, which that doesn't exist. So, but there are a lot of studies because the inflammatory component of rheumatoid arthritis is so prominent, and you can see the changes in some of these inflammatory markers. So there are studies done on patients with rheumatoid conditions, specifically fish oil supplements, omega-3 supplementation, showing benefit for inflammation. I just mentioned quercetin, which is a phytochemical in like onions, coffee, apples. That's associated.
That's our little quercetin
yeah.
that we all love so much more than anything else. Now, when we come back, I'm going to be introducing to Dr. Wittstein my favorite part of the book. I love the whole book, but I got a special favorite one. When we come back. The Her Podcast is sponsored by Solaray Vitamins, Minerals, and Herbs, all rooted in nature. In addition to women's multivitamins, Solaray, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y, is presenting the new Her Life Stages products, providing support for the menstrual years, including PMS, perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause, and even libido. This integrative holistic approach has a woman's back throughout her entire life journey. To learn more about Her Life Stages, you've got options. You can run on over to your local health food store or check it out at Whole Foods, Sprouts, Amazon, or scroll over to Solaray.com and use promo code HER20 for 20% off your purchase. Women, Solaray's got your back. And we're back. Okay. Whoa. I got it with the supplements. Actually, I'm just going to go back to the collagen again, because for a while I was just not sure about the science, but I'm going to believe you because of your background. So there you go. I'm just put all the burden on you, Dr. Wittstein.
Okay,
all
I'll right. take it.
Now we're going to go to my most favorite part of the book, and you're going to love this. It involves a four-letter word, pain. Okay. So what you're going to find out there in the wonderful Her Podcast land is this book has a ridiculous number of recipes and great nutritional tips and techniques and tools, but it also has a serious number of exercises. And Dr. Wittstein actually is a model for many of these. You would be too if you were a gymnast. And who was the other model?
Oh, my co-author. We were both gymnasts.
Okay, so
yeah.
Okay, so I didn't know what she looked like. All right, so you have two gymnasts in there. Yeah.
Decided to do it ourselves rather than hire someone.
Try not to hate them for their bodies. Okay, now, so I'm whizzing through all of this, and needless to say, I'm on the board of the American College of Sports Medicine, kind of been there, done that, and whipping through, going, check, check, check. Yep, she got that one too. Mm-hmm. And they all look great. And then I got to the part that I loved. Pain. What do you do about pain, for crying out loud? Now, the reason why I'm bringing this up is a very serious one in a big way. It's 2025. Over 40% of the adult population are obese, and some very seriously obese. And women are more obese than men, if you actually look at the numbers. The number, you tell me if I'm wrong, the number one reason for a knee replacement has more to do with obesity than it does for being in the NFL.
Well, obesity is certainly a risk for arthritis, and it's also can be an inflammatory state as well.
Well, it's pro-inflammatory.
Yeah, yes. And the reason I say that is actually obesity is associated with arthritis and even non-weight-bearing joints. So some of it is probably a metabolic inflammatory issue, and some of it is actually mechanical load on joints, but it's not just mechanical load, because then, you know, the upper extremity joints wouldn't show that increased risk as well.
The reason why I bring this up is this. It's a practical reason, Dr. Wittstein. And I'm writing my next book now. It's my sixth. It's one of the first things I mentioned in the book. And that is, there's a very good chance that if you're picking up this book right now, you're overweight or obese because of the numbers out there. There's a good chance. 20 years ago when I wrote my first book, the answer was, nah, maybe not so much, maybe you're a little overweight or whatever. Now it's a very different world. And so when someone who has been fairly sedentary has not been on top of the nutrition situation the way they should, and that you don't have to be obese to have rotten nutrition, you could be anything, but I'm just saying, and that you have this pro-inflammatory state in your body, and now you haven't exercised for 900 reasons, and now you pick up this book and you go, I want to take control now. I'm done. This is ridiculous. And maybe someone's on a GLP drug, and we've talked about this on the Herb podcast many times. We're getting more and more people who want to become more physically active as they're dropping more weight on this new class of medications for dropping weight. So how would you approach someone who really is fairly raw? And let's just say that they're your age.
Like to get started on physical activity?
Just to get started on physical activity. You're an orthopedic surgeon. You know what they may hurt. Now, I'll give you an example. I had one woman who came to me and said, she is 240 pounds, 5'7", and she says, I'm going to start running tomorrow. Okay. All right. I would love for you to go through the way of looking at the biomechanics of running. As we know, for every time the foot hits the ground, you're taking how many times your body weight, et cetera?
Well, there is some compression of cartilage that happens, and it generally does rebound over time, but for people who are overweight, there is more compression of cartilage. Running is not my first choice for people who are starting, you know, above ideal body weight, like in terms of like activity to pursue first. And I want to emphasize, I do actually have a lot of patients who do exercise quite regularly and are optimizing their nutrition, but have these, I mean, some people just have metabolic set points and they're at a higher body weight and these medications are really helping them. And some of my patients who are obese, they really are already exercising. And so they're not starting from scratch. They've been doing strength training, that kind of thing. But I do say to them, like, I wouldn't choose running as your form of cardio. I would want them to ramp up strength training, and you can't start at a high intensity right away, but we know muscle is a very metabolically active tissue and can help with insulin sensitivity and so many benefits to your metabolism, but also helping your bone density and changing your body composition. So I really want them to like engage in strength training in a graduated way. I tell people choose less high impact forms of cardiovascular exercise to start. Maybe you can transition to more of the impact, like as body weight comes down, like rowing, using the erg machine we talked about, biking, elliptical, swimming. Now, some of those options like biking is not going to help you with your bone density. That's why I really like rowing, because it can be lower impact on your joints, but still give you some benefits for bone density and the cardiovascular benefits. But I think in any of these scenarios, we have to make sure like strength training is involved 2 or 3 days a week as part of that core exercise program. And I do think people can hurt themselves if they just go, if you hear like, you have to lift heavy, you have to lift heavy. And people just, you can't start just lifting heavy. You have to start with, honestly, many times just your body weight and having good form and control, like so much importance to good form and control of the position your body is in. And then gradually increasing from low intensity to moderate and eventually to high. So I just think we need to see people where they're starting and build them up. And yeah, specific caveat, I think if you're truly obese, running wouldn't be my choice for your major form of cardiovascular activity.
Yeah, I think that that's very important. I mean, people get excited when they go to 5Ks and marathons and whatever, and they go, hey, I could do that. It really depends. One of my fondest memories was when I was running a Marine Corps marathon in Washington, and I think we had just hit mile 10. You're out there alone. My friends would show up every 5 miles and scream at me, remember, you paid to do this to yourself. And I said, thanks a lot. It's like, come on, give me a break. Give me some encouragement here. But a young woman ran up and she was sort of close to me. You know how you sort of pace with people in marathons and you're kind of out there hanging. And she was lovely, but she was clearly, I would say she easily had 50 pounds on board. And she had a nice clip going. I'm like, whoa, all right. And she had this gorgeous glowing smile on her face. So I looked at her, I said, what are you so happy about? We're in the middle of a marathon. You're supposed to look miserable. And she said, well, my birthday's coming up. I'm really excited. And I said, happy birthday. And she says, I have an anniversary I'm celebrating too. And I said, what's that? She says, my first 50-pound weight reduction. I said, excuse me? She said, yeah, I'm down 50. I have another to go. But you know, I feel pretty good. And I almost fell out of my sneakers. And then of course, then she goes, ta-da, and then just takes off. And I'm like, okay. The only thing that consoled me was I was older than she was. I was like, what?
Yeah. I mean, I have some very athletic, overweight patients that are, so they're actually, weight is confusing because muscle mass can be very heavy. So you could be a very athletic person and have a very high BMI. Body weight isn't everything. There's also composition, but yeah, just being very large and heavy can be a bit more stress on your cartilage running.
Yeah. And I just want to make certain that everyone out there knows that this book is so inclusive. It's for everyone.
You could be a beginner or not. Yeah.
Yeah. Intermediate, whatever. I love the fact that you had the modifications for higher intensity, et cetera. And I just want to make sure people know not to run away and go, oh God, it's one of those books for little skinny people and whatever. No, no, everyone needs this book because it addresses the same issues we all have. Now, let's get back to the pain part. So I told you that was my favorite part. And this is way into the book, like around page 216 or something. And it was all about like knee pain, low back pain, shoulder pain, stretches for better posture and to help reduce neck pain. I loved this.
Well, those are the most common pains we see that are not, they're not traumatic, but I just wanted to include the most common life-related pain points that people have and just sort of give people a little, like, I don't know, half a dozen things they can do for each of these like really common problems.
Well, for everyone out there, there's like an entire menu here. And then with some really great graphics and pictures and stuff that go along with this so you understand what you really want to do. Like I went for the better posture thing and the rest of it. I loved it. The corner chest stretch, the wall chest stretch.
Now, unfortunately, I did model the chin tuck, which is the most unflattering picture in the book.
I kind of I was going to bring it up, but now that you've brought it up, it was not your best. But
well, my friend and co-author, Sydney, we each picked one unflattering thing to model. She picked the transverse abdominis exercise where you basically make yourself look kind of pregnant. And so
yeah.
We picked that one and I picked the chin tuck. We each fell on the sword one time to demonstrate.
I just thought that was fantastic. And, you know, another reason why you should believe what Dr. Wittstein has stated, she practices what she preaches. She's still physically active despite being a mother of five, being a full-time orthopedic surgeon. I could go on. But she practices what she preaches, and that's something I live. And this is another reason why I do a hat tip to you. It's always great to meet a kindred spirit, because there's pontificating and then there's living it. And I'm tired of the pontificating. Like, are your fingernails dirty? Have you gotten out there and done your thing? And that's what I really respect with this.
I mean, what's in there is pretty much... Like, people ask me these questions all the time, and these are the answers I give them. Obviously, they're a little bit more individualized during a patient visit, and I'm not trying to treat people in this book, but it's just real information.
I just loved it. Now, some of these I do anyway. I love the wall chest stretch. That's one of my all-time favorites. But the one thing that's interesting, and this gets filed under stuff happens in life. I've run. I'm a triathlete. I've done powerlifting. I've done all the... Yeah, I've tortured my body. Okay, let's just be honest. And I had the strangest thing happen when... I think this was in 2021. I remember it was during COVID. And it was interesting. And you'll love this. Because they took away my gym during COVID. I had no gym. And I belonged to the Equinox gym, one of my favorites. And there was no gym. And all my big machines, and I'm used to big leg presses and stuff. I'm a strength-trained athlete. And they took it all away. And it was a very difficult time for me. And I couldn't do a lot of the stuff. I clearly tried to do the body weight stuff I could do, but I'm still missing my big equipment. And I needed that. So I noticed something coming down the stairs. I started feeling almost like my knees were going to buckle. But without my leg press machine and I was doing my body squats and stuff, but God, you couldn't do anything because you're like tied into your home and whatever. Anyway, one thing led to another, and I went to see my most favorite orthopedic surgeon. He's one of the big sports guys with the Greater Washington Orthopedic Group. So he came in, and I've known him for years. And he looked at me and said, well, I got good news for you. I'll give you that first. And I said, oh, God, there's bad news. He goes, yeah. And I said, well, what's the good news? He says, well, look at the space between. Your knees are like those of a 30-year-old.
Good joint space.
You really Yeah, my joint space, you could run a Mack truck through. And he said, just a little lipping, little tiny bit of osteoarthritis. Nothing. Yeah, nothing much. And I looked at it. I said, oh, man. I was like throwing my chest out. I grew some hair at that moment, my chest. I'm like, yeah, look at me. He goes, yeah, well, now we're going to look at your patella.
Yeah, behind your kneecap.
And out of the blue, I had never in my life had my kneecaps x-rayed. That was like a first. I'm like, whoa. And the little,
sunrise,
what do you call it? Yeah, the sunrise view. Yeah. So he put them up. He didn't even have to say anything. I said, oh, my God, there's no space. He says, you have end stage.
Patellofemoral arthritis.
Patellofemoral osteoarthritis.
Yeah.
End stage. So I sat there for a minute. I did want to beat the hell out of the x-ray, but I couldn't, not without messing up his gorgeous office. So, I mean, I was absolutely beside myself. And I said, how in the hell did I end up with that? How random is that? My knees are perfect and my kneecaps
pretty
just went to hell.
Actually, yeah.
Tell me about it.
Yeah. So arthritis behind your kneecap or patellofemoral arthritis is the part of your knee that responds best to strengthening and physical therapy. And that's where we have in there, like actually what a lot of the comments or directions, things off the menu are listed. Really directed at patellofemoral pain. So it responds very well to strengthening of your hip abductors, your hip extra rotators, core, some quad strengthening, but actually so much of the pain alleviation of patellofemoral arthritis comes from actually hip strengthening, because your hip controls the rotation of the femur, the what we call adduction of your femur, basically controls, ends up controlling in space where the groove is for your kneecap. And so people are always surprised. There's a lot of core and hip work involved in alleviating patellofemoral pain. And a lot of it is in actually some of the smaller muscles of the hip too. So sometimes things you don't need a lot of equipment to strengthen, like your hip external rotators and your abductors, you can strengthen quite a lot with various forms of planking and clamshells and band work and single leg work. But yeah, so people are always surprised at how much they improve from specific exercises for patellofemoral pain or patellofemoral arthritis.
I ran in there and I said to myself, self, what you want to do is now get back to the strength training in the legs, and you're going to take it a little bit slower because I'm used to big weights. I've been doing it for decades. This is not some macho thing. It's just I have the muscles to do it with. And I did it nice and slowly. And I said to myself, I need to work all of the muscles around my knee, and I need to make certain they're good and strong. Would you know, lo and behold, within 6 months, everything was gone. I was perfectly fine. And ever since then, I'm religious about doing exactly what you just said. I just sort of did a little what I love to call MSU, make stuff up. I just sort of made up my own little recipe. If only I'd had your book, you know, like hurry up and write the damn thing. But I'm just telling you out there that we're all going to end up with something. Okay. I mean, we're not getting out of this without some owie going on.
That's true.
So let's just get real. Yeah. You know, and if you don't have an owie by the age of 50, you haven't lived. All right. Come on now.
Well, I do think like what you described is people, there's a lot of disbelief, like, oh, what would physical therapy do? How would they help me? And like, when you go to physical therapy for guidance, some people have a hard time doing strengthening, like working around knee pain. But you can really benefit quite a lot from strength training and for reducing knee pain. And sometimes having a physical therapist for guidance is good.
You know, as we're coming full tilt on this thing, you really get into bone a lot, which is really important. So let's just for a moment go to the muscle and bone place. What I love is multitasking. So it's really nice that when you're working your muscles, you're working your bone. Go to that place, Dr. Wittstein.
Yeah. So strength training is one of the core principles of helping to slow bone loss or even reverse some of it. Strength training has an effect of like tugging, pulling on your bones, basically. And then also strength training where you're carrying or like loading your bones applies what we call like joint reaction forces, as opposed to jumping exercises, which also help your bones. And that applies more of a ground reaction force. So there's so much information in all people. Physical activity that includes some jumping and some strength training helps young people accrue more bone mass before the age of 30. And if you're not quite over the age of 50, let's say you're in the range 30 to 50, it also helps you accrue or gain some bone mass or minimize loss of bone. Very important, especially in women over the age of 50, as bone mass, bone density, whichever term you want to use, declines more rapidly in the absence or withdrawal of estradiol. We get some more rapid loss of muscle mass. We get longer living osteoclasts, the cells that break down bone as opposed to the blasts which build bone. So we get accelerated bone loss, some accelerated muscle loss. So we do have to work a little harder to maintain or gain muscle mass. And then we need to do jumping and strength training to maintain or gain some bone density back. And the most well-known trial showing the benefits of strength training, which you, I sure know well, is of course the LIFT-MORE trial, which is a randomized prospective trial of menopausal women who had an average T-score of -2. So that's in the osteopenic range, not quite osteoporosis, which would be -2.5. These are 65-year-old women on average who were put through an 8-month program. And the first 2 months, they sort of built them up from light and moderate intensity to high intensity strength training. And they used 4 core exercises. So the first one was a jumping chin up, which was a version of impact and jumping, but also a little upper extremity pulling. And then the other maneuvers were back squat, overhead press, and deadlift. And they built these women up to doing 5 sets of 5 of each of those 3 exercises. at a high intensity. So meaning 80 or 85% of your single rep max. And I always tell people, like, what's your single rep max? If someone hasn't helped you test that, it's hard to figure out. But it's the amount of weight you would lift if the fifth rep was the last one you could do with good form before you rest a few minutes and do the next set. So think of that level of lifting. And what those women gained was, over that 8-month period, they gained 3% in their lumbar spine bone density and they gained 0.3% in their hip bone density, whereas the control groups lost like around a percentage point in the lumbar spine and lost about 2% in the hip. So I always tell people, with strength training, jumping, weight bearing exercises, whatever you're doing, not losing bone density is actually gaining, because the natural history is to lose after the age of 30 and then more beyond the age of 50 for women. But this program was shown to actually not only help them not lose, they gained. So that's just the best example of the benefits of strength training. But there are multiple studies showing this in premenopausal women as well. And of course, we know that youth who are active in sports and load-bearing activities hit 30 with higher peak bone mass, and they continue to benefit from that. So it's not just menopausal women, but really everyone who benefits from strength training and jumping as part of their exercise programs for bone density. So that was a really long answer, but I think it covers it.
It was beautiful. I really sincerely appreciate that. So as we're drawing this to a close now, God, I can talk to you forever. So my production team would like to know if you'd like to be what we love to call a repeat offender,
meaning that you come back on a routine basis.
Yeah. It's a repeat offender. You're going to come back and just offend us with everything. So what I'd like to tell everyone, and you tell me if I'm saying this right, when you pick up this book, again, it's called The Complete Bone and Joint Health Plan. And when you pick it up, play with it. In the beginning, you're going to get some great introductory information. All right, bones and joints, women. All right, we're going to get all that. But then hop around all over the place. Look at some of the recipes. Look at some of the nutritional information and education that you're going to get. You may know some of the stuff already, and then there's plenty I guarantee you do not know. So you're going to have to kind of whiz through a little bit. It's kind of like you went to a restaurant, right? And you're looking at the menu, you're like, appetizers and entrees and what. Whiz through it, have a little look and see where you want to start and what you might want to experiment with. And if you haven't been physically active for quite some time, and if you have some other issues like osteoarthritis, someone has told you this, you've been diagnosed, take it easy. Go gradually. Yeah. Be patient with yourself and build over time. I'm here to tell you, and so is Dr. Wittstein, that you will be rewarded for your patience. And it takes consistency. So for the very last piece of this, your point of wisdom about how often a woman should be attending to her bones and joints on a daily basis and throughout the week.
Well, I think ideally you would get 2 or 3 days of strength training in a week and a few days where you do, if your joints tolerate it, some jumping, 30 jumps a few days a week. The best combination for bone health is strength training plus a little impact training. And I do want to add, if you can't tolerate jumping, like an 8-inch drop jump with a rebound is a great example of something you can do 30 times a few days a week to stimulate hip bone density. You can do heel drops. You can jump in a pool. You can jump on a rebounder. Those aren't as effective as some of those more intense things, but there are always nuances that you can do to kind of still give yourself some benefit. So I would say some impact and strength training, again, depending on your individual circumstances, a few days a week. The other aspects of cardiovascular exercise are not even related to bone and joint health. They're related to like dementia prevention, cardiovascular health, metabolic health, prevention of mood, psychological benefits. So while the strength training part and the impact part, I think, yes, 2 or 3 days a week, but then you do need to figure out how to still get in your cardiovascular activity. If high impact stuff is not good for your joints, you're struggling with that, remember that walking 35 minutes a day has been shown to dramatically reduce risk of hip fractures in women. it's not that walking makes your bones so strong. It's something about the movement and the practice of walking, the mobility of walking, that actually is fracture preventative, not necessarily osteoporosis preventative, but fracture preventative, which is the whole goal. You don't want to fall and break a hip, right? But choosing your cardio, I like for people to think about, you need to get 150 minutes a week of moderate exercise for dementia prevention. Your heart health, I want people to do at least one high intensity interval training, cardiovascular activity per week. For me, I do a Norwegian 4x4. I do that every Monday. That's my how I get that in. And that has been shown to improve your VO2 max and basically make your heart younger. A few days a week of 30, 35 minutes of something zone two. Again, it could be the walking. And then like one day a week where you're getting some endurance and where your activity is 45 minutes to an hour. It could be dancing, it could be riding a bike, it could be walking, but something where you get something longer for endurance. So it's not all about your bone and joint health. There is a lot of importance to dementia prevention and cardiovascular health. And so that's where that cardio piece comes in, I think.
All right. So really what she was doing was giving you a little bonus out there.
Yeah.
It wasn't just bones, bones and joints. It's your brain, damn it.
Yeah.
And your heart. And it's just all good stuff. Everyone, we have been talking to Dr. Jocelyn Wittstein. She is an orthopedic surgeon who specializes in sports medicine and women's health. And she's at Duke University. And she's the author of a brand new book. And honey, just run out and get this, because this is the easiest read on the planet, and you will absolutely love it. It'll become your go-to. You'll just whip right through this thing and just pick and choose. It's like one huge menu. It's called The Complete Bone and Joint Health Plan. Help prevent and treat osteoporosis and arthritis. And it just came out. So remember, the complete bone. Yeah, that's right. So it just came out, the complete bone and joint health plan. You're going to love it. Dr. Wittstein, I want to thank you for being on the HERP podcast.
Thank you for having me.
All right. And I want to thank my sponsor, Solaray Vitamins. Those vitamins, minerals, and herbs rooted in nature, and the new Her Life Stages products. Every single stage of a woman's life. Scope it out at solaray.com. That's S-O-L-A-R-A-Y.com. Now take a moment to leave us a review, because you know something? We just sit around waiting to hear from you. We love your feedback. Everyone, this has been a production of Podcast Health. Here's a little reminder. Your time in this world may be limited, but the things you can do with that time are not. So how about you just get on out there and seize the day? A little carpe diem for everybody. Thanks for listening.